Welcome to the Mobility Management Podcast. I'm Jack Silverstein, Director of the Mobility Management Content Studio. We are fortunate to have Philippe Correa on the podcast today from Stealth Products. Philippe lives in Portugal and shares with us what the mobility landscape looks like in Europe compared to North America, with lessons that American care providers can learn from their European counterparts. He discusses how U.S. clinicians might benefit from European strategies around muscle support and the similarities and differences in reimbursement from the U.S. to Europe. Hi, everyone. I am Jack Silverstein, director of the content studio at Mobility Management. And here joining me today, very excited to have Philippe Correa, the International Business Development Manager for Stealth Products. Philippe, how are you today?
I'm very good. It's the end of the day here in Portugal, so, I'm almost done.
That's right. You mentioned you're in Portugal. I'm in the United States. Most of our listeners are in the United States, but one of the key reasons we wanted to bring Philippe onto the show today was to get a perspective of the mobility industry from Europe and what it looks like in Europe. And there are always important ways that anyone can learn from someone else's experience. And we thought that showing what everything looks like from Portugal, from Europe, will be very valuable to our predominantly United States listenership. So if you could, sir, at a high level, give us the landscape of the mobility industry in Europe. Obviously, something that is totally different is the number of different countries. So from a federal standpoint, countries are going to be different from states. But because people are running their businesses nationwide across multiple states, they also have areas where they have to learn something outside of the box that, they're not accustomed to based on, a region, a zone, et cetera. So give us the overview, please, on mobility in Europe.
Yeah, like you said, in Europe, we have several different countries and every country has their own reimbursement system. Even the products and the needs are a little bit different from Portugal to Spain, to Italy, to France, to Germany, and so on. It's a little bit different from the U.S. because you do have the states, but you are under the same umbrella. Let's put it this way, right? So the law, the reimbursement, Medicaid, Medicare, they're going to be the same. There are differences from state to state, yes, but the law is going to be the same. It's not the same in Europe. The reimbursement systems and the way that people do business and they're in the rehab world are completely different from Portugal to Germany, for instance. Every country has their own reimbursement system. There are countries where it's very similar to the U.S., where you have a catalog or a list of products that are financed by the government. Others that you do not, like the case of Portugal. Portugal is a very interesting case because the products need to be registered, obviously, in the agencies from the government. But you do not have a catalog or a list of products that the government will say, well, for this chair, I will pay X amount of euros. It's normally about to the prescribing team, the clinical team, or the clinicians team to choose whatever products the client may need. And they have a budget to manage throughout the year and they manage their budget. So it's, they can easily prescribe diapers and, €50,000 chair, power chair. I mean, it's up to them to justify that choice and to do it like that. In for instance, in France or in Spain, you have a very strict list of products that the government is paying and how much they're paying for that, which is a different system. It's not, I would not say that it's worse or better. It's just different. It's a different way of doing things that kind of leaves a lot of room for the dealers to make that choice for the client. That could be a problem, but it's Europe. So we have, 30, 40 countries doing different things, the same thing in a different way. So
let's zone in then on this and let's talk about the general approach to seating and postural support. How does it differ in Europe from what you've observed in the United States?
Well, the principles and the fundamental goals are going to be the same, right? So everyone, you see someone in a wheelchair or with a need for a partial system, the needs are going to be the same. We're going to look for function and so on. So that's the goals, the basics are the same. The way that you have the system organized in the U.S., for instance, it's something that I would, some of it, I would, I'm jealous. Like, for instance, the figure of an ATP in the U.S., we don't have it in Europe. So you have the prescribing centers, so the big rehab clinics that have the clinicians doing the assessments and just working with the client. And then you have the dealers that, you know, simply sell the product. And sometimes there is a disconnect. In some countries, you can have a disconnect between the clinician's team and the language that they are talking to the dealer. They are just only concerned in selling the product. So having that figure of an ATP that kind of builds a bridge between, you know, a true clinician team and the product itself, it's an advantage. In Europe, in some countries, it's a struggle because you can have, you know, a simple salesperson trying to do a power chair assessment. That could be a problem, as you can see. the goals, again, the goals are going to be the same. While we look for the same thing, the way that we're going to get there is where the difference is.
And regarding those differences, how do they influence how clinicians and manufacturers prioritize postural variation?
The partial variation is a good topic just because, you know, if you look at the all the products out there that allow you to have partial variation throughout the day, you have a lot of different systems. So, for instance, you have tilt, you have recline, you have the dynamic products like, for instance, dynamic headrest or dynamic back or dynamic footrest. But all of them are kind of a base, the dynamic ones at least, they are kind of having the high tone clients in mind, right? So I'm going to use a dynamic back if I have a client that extends a lot, has a high tone. But what about the low tone clients? They also need partial variation because this will help me to control my position throughout the day. It's going to increase my comfort and allow me to have better head control, you know, to stay more hours in the chair, in a comfortable position and so on. So, there's a lot of different products that you these days allow you to do partial variation. They are not just seen as partial variations as we think they should be. For me, partial variation is something that allows me, because being an able-bodied person, I'm in the office, I sit in my chair for, 6 hours a day, doing my stuff, or doing training, or meetings, or so ever. I change my position 1,000 times throughout the day, 1,000 times. And we are kind of asking someone that sits in a sitting system, in a wheelchair, to perform those same activities that I do, but in the same position. I'm not allowing the person to change or to do partial variation. They're going to get tired. They're going to fight against the system. You look at tilt and you say, well, but you know, if I use a tilt chair, I'm allowing the person to do partial variations. Yes, but then we tend to use tilt or look at tilt as a long-term thing. In other words, if I use tilt should be something that I use for short periods of time. I should not have someone tilted a 45 degrees tilt 2 hours or 3 hours, because then I'm going to lose function, because I'm going to be looking at the ceiling. There will be compensations from the client, and tilt should be a short period of time only. In Scandinavia, for instance, tilt is not called tilt. It's called a multi-position chair, for instance, because the idea is I use tilt for allowing the client to rest into a certain position and then come back to a neutral position or a vertical position. That's still on the recline side. You know, recline is also allows me to do partial variations, but has a lot of downsides of it, because every time I do, you know, a recline back, I'm opening the seat to back angle, and I'm facilitating the sliding off the chair from the client, and that demands then that I have to have caregivers or family members to always reposition the client throughout the day several times, and that's not ideal, obviously. So partial variation, it's a very interesting, again, a very interesting subject, because although we do have some products out there for a long period of time, like Chilton Recline, that allows me to do some partial variations, but they are not exactly what we're looking for or should be looking for. For us, for me in particular, partial variation should be something that allows the client throughout the day to move into different positions, either to be more functional or either to rest. The same things that I do in my office chair, but without compromising my position, without, you know, losing myself, losing pelvic position or stability, and then need to have a caregiver or family member to readjust me in the chair. That's not ideal, like I said.
Understood. Absolutely. Philippe, let's look at another area of comparison between the United States and Europe, and that would be the fundamental goals of seating systems. What are the key differences in how these fundamentals are taught or implemented in Europe compared to here in the States?
It depends on countries, right? Like I said, if you have a country that is severely depending on the work that the dealer is going to do with a client, you have the risk that the dealer is not well trained enough in the science of seating and biomechanical movement, and that could create some issues. That's a big advantage from the US, because you have the ATPs, and the ATPs are phenomenal professionals that build a bridge between the manufacturers of the product itself and the dealers and the clinicians. So in that sense, I would say that the fundamental goals are easier to get to or to apply in the US than are in certain countries in Europe.
Yeah, that is fair enough. We've got a few more topics, but I'm curious to hear right here, what are like the big highest level areas where United States providers can learn from your experience and learn from the European experience? What can they right now bring with them into their work that they might not have known about?
That's a tough one. You just compare Europe to the US is an unfair comparison sometimes, because you have countries where you have things to compare in a positive way, others not so much. I would say that here in Europe, there is a very nice connection in some countries, again, between the manufacturer, the clinicians, and the dealer. And that connection is really strong. And sometimes what I feel in the US is that, I'm not trying to be unfair, but the experience that I have is that sometimes you have that disconnect in the US. So, you know, having that connection between the dealer, having someone like an ATP that really knows their stuff, having the support of the clinician, and having the manufacturer involved in this work, in these assessments that we can do with our clients, it's a positive thing that you see in a lot of different countries in Europe. And then also the reimbursement system itself in some locations is really good. You know, it's good to a point that you are entitled of, you know, for instance, if you have a child with divorced parents, so the child is entitled of positioning products, power chairs, strollers, manual chairs, beds, whatever, for the mom, for the dad, for instance. There are countries in Europe that's mandatory. So in some countries, the reimbursement system helps that this connection is stronger. So if I have something to say, would be, you know, make things easier in terms of reimbursement in the US would be, you know, a good thing.
Well said. So let's go here. Fatigue in postural muscles is a universal challenge. It exists in Europe. It exists in individual countries in Europe. Shout out to Portugal. It exists here in the United States. I'm in Chicago. Other people, Dallas, Miami, Seattle, New York, wherever you are, it's going to be an issue. Are there different strategies or technologies in Europe, or if you think it's more fair to say in Portugal, if we want to zero in, but in Europe that you find especially effective, ones that U.S. clinicians might benefit from exploring that they might not yet be using?
So I think that the way that people see fatigue and postural relaxation or postural fatigue for my postural muscles is going to be the same everywhere. And I'm not. I think that we are just uncovering everything that we can do to deal with that fatigue of the postural muscles. Right now and so far, the strategy both in the U.S. and UK in Europe would be to position my client, give them the support that they need, and expect them not to move within the sitting system. And I use strategies like I said, tilt or recline or even lumbar supports to deal with that fatigue of the postural muscles. We tend to use a lot of anterior supports like positioning belts or harnesses to stabilize my trunk and my pelvis in my sitting system to deal with that fatigue. And that's what we have, for many, many years. And, it kind of works depending on the client, depending on the diagnosis, but you really need to have a lot of different stuff going on in the sitting system. And one of the things that I learned very early in my career was that less is more in terms of sitting systems. So the less products I'm able to use, the better to my client and to his function. So when I have, because I'm trying to stabilize and deal with fatigue, and I'm adding more products to the seating system, it's not necessarily good, definitely not economical, but for the client, it could be a struggle. So we launched a system called Epic, this Epic allows me to do postural variation without compromising pelvic stability. So in Europe, and I have a good example in Italy, they started using the system about 2 years ago, and it's a mind changer. It's a mind changer because it allows you to do whatever movements you want throughout the day. It doesn't matter the diagnosis of your client. It doesn't matter if he has a low tone or a high tone client, allows you to do these partial variations. So in the US, I believe because of the reimbursement system. And again, the last question with this one, it's kind of a connected because having such a rigid and strict reimbursement system, it's also a problem where every time you're trying to introduce something new that nobody has done before. So this partial variation that we're using here in some countries like Portugal, UK, Italy, France, it's a good thing to deal with that partial fatigue, because what you're doing with partial variation is dealing with fatigue. The clinicians out there will probably know what I'm saying when I talk about isometric contraction. Isometric contraction is, it's when you contract a muscle and you're not allowing the muscle to move. Like for instance, if you straighten your arm out there and just grabbing your phone and just trying to hold it up for a period of time, it's a light thing. The phone, right? It's very light, but after 5 minutes, it's going to be very heavy. That is called the isometric contraction. And this is what we're trying our clients to do when they are sitting upright in the same position for 3, 4, 5, 6 hours a day. That's why the muscle fatigue. So allowing movement will help them to deal with that fatigue of that isometric contraction. And that partial variation systems allow you to do that without compromising your pelvic stability, allowing you to be more functional in your upper trunk and with your head and your arms and so on.
Wonderful. So Let's talk about static seating and its impact on head positioning. How is the multi-segmented approach received or applied across different healthcare systems?
That's a very interesting question. So not so long ago, we always look at head positioning as the last thing that I needed to do on a seating system. So, I just want to position my head because my clients having low tone, for instance, always drop his head. And we were not going back into, you know, having this holistic approach to the client and see where this is coming from. Is there something else or somewhere else that I could deal with that will affect head positioning? So when we started working on this segmental approach to the spinal cord or the spine, we would see that, you know, if I'm allowing my pelvis to go into a posterior pelvic tilt, I will have a reaction from my lumbar spine. And then if my lumbar spine will react to that posterior pelvic tilt, my thoracic spine will also react. If my thoracic spine will react, then, you know, I have a compensation with my cervical area. And that will definitely impact both negatively and positively the head positioning. So if you look at someone and just, you know, look at static, because we always were afraid of movement. So that's why we use positioning belts and harnesses and all this stuff in the seating system, because every time I have a client that is moving the seating system, oh my God, that's a problem because I don't know how to deal with that movement. So I'm trying to block that movement and support everything. Well, movement is part of life. We need movement to do every single thing that we do in our lives. If you go back to physiotherapy schools and occupational therapy schools, movement is used in therapy, in classes, in treatments. Movement is the base for everything. So if you do not allow movement to occur in my seating system, this will definitely affect my head positioning. That's a fact. We know that because of the muscle fatigue, but also because discomfort and pain. So people try to deal with that with movement. And then sometimes there's compensations throughout the body that ends up in a bad or a poorly head positioning. Let's not forget that the head is the most heaviest organ that we have on our body. So if I don't have everything really good balanced and supported, it's going to be really, really tough for me to sustain my head. I have a comment here for you on the head position. Let me see if I can find it here. There is a study that talks about the force needed for the neck to sustain my head position or to sustain my head. And it's unbelievable. When I saw this for the first time, I was like, wow, this kind of justifies a lot of different stuff that I'm seeing with my clients, because if I'm allowing here we go. The average weight of the head is 10 to 11 pounds. Okay. And it exerts about 10 to 12 pounds of force on the neck. Okay. If I'm allowing about 15 degrees of forward flexion, so my head is facing forward, 27 pounds of force is exerted. So I go from 10, 12 pounds to 27. Okay.
That's significant.
How much I'm demanding on my neck.
That's the Jerry Maguire thing. The little kid who said the human head weighs 8 pounds. I didn't know until right this moment.
Exactly.
All the implications of what he was trying to tell us.
Now, and then we imagine 27 pounds of force on seven vertebrae, small vertebrae like our cervical spine is. It's terrible. And the more you allow the head to go forward, like 30 degrees of flexion, you go to 30 pounds of force. That's huge. Because I'm just asking my seven vertebrae, cervical vertebrae, to sustain my head, and my neck muscles need to use 27 pounds of 30 pounds of force. This is unbelievable. So static is not so good at all to head positioning, because every time I'm not allowed to move, I will cause a chain reaction over my spine, on my trunk, that will have compensations, and you know, head position is a big issue.
That is very informative. Thank you. So let's wrap it up. We got two topics here. First, how is movement within seating systems viewed from a European clinical or engineering standpoint, especially in terms of long-term outcomes and funding priorities?
Again, you know, the way that we're seeing movement, everybody's really scared about movement, starting with the manufacturers, because if I have a client that moves a lot in my seating system, my products need to be strong enough to sustain that movement without breaking, without twisting, without, you know, failing, and still give the proper support that I need to my client and allow them to move in a good way. So movement is something that is really affecting the entire seating systems in general. Now, the approach of the manufacturers has been, in general terms, obviously, has been, I'm going to make my product stronger so that I can deal with that movement, instead of having wasting my time in building a system that allows or moves with my client. And again, we need to understand that the majority of the products out there are that allow movement, they are built for high tone clients. Okay, so if I have a low tone client, they also need posture variation. And the majority of the products would not allow them to do that. So, you know, there's still a long way for the manufacturers to deal with that posture variation. Like I said, the Epic is the first step, and it's an amazing product that, you know, it's changing the way that we see movement and how to deal with movement in seating worldwide.
Terrific. And I want to wrap this up. And Philippe, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for your time. Lastly, what are some of the most promising or innovative postural variation solutions that you've seen in Europe, whether in Portugal or elsewhere? And how do they compare to what's currently being adopted in the US?
Right now, like I said, I mentioned the Epic several times throughout our conversation.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
The Epic was a design of an amazing Belgian therapist, a physiotherapist called Bart van de Heijden. And he was looking at the segmentation of the trunk, like we talked before, and used that in behalf of allowing the client to move, so having that partial variation without compromising pelvic stability and allowing to increase your function. So this system is built in the US right now by Stealth Products, and it's been sold across the world. So right now, if you just look at addressing partial variation with an innovative enough solution, it's the Epic, and it's the same in Europe and US. So because this product has been sold in both US and Europe, everything else, like I said, is more focused on high tone clients, or not really to deal with partial variation, but dealing with movement, undesired movement, if you like. So the Epic is probably the first real partial variation system that we see, and hopefully we're going to see across the board for everybody, because it's just unbelievable.
Fantastic. And I know Bart, I know Bart's work. I've had the pleasure of speaking with him. So very familiar with what he has brought to the space. And I'm glad we got to mention him. Philippe, thank you so much for joining us here on the Mobility Management Podcast. This has been fascinating. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
It's a pleasure. Every time I have the chance to do something with you guys, we should do more of this with more people from Europe, because I think there's so much that we need to learn. There's a lot of conferences out there like ISS and so on, that there's some interaction between clinicians and professionals in Europe and actually globally and the American ones. But I think that we should work more closely together to fully understand our needs, because the needs of the clients are going to be exactly the same. It doesn't matter if it is American or Portuguese or an Italian or a German, they are going to be the same. The way that we deal with that is that's the big difference, and I think we need to get closer and closer as time goes by.
thank you so much to Felipe Correa of Stealth Products for joining us today on the Mobility Management Podcast. For more episodes, visit mobilitymgmt.com/podcasts.